You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Hey, hey! Welcome to a brand new year and to HR Bandit. If this is your first time here, an even bigger welcome from me, your host, Ankita Podar, dialing in bright-eyed and bushy-tailed from a very cold Dublin. If this is you returning, a big hug, and I'm so glad to see you back on our first episode of the year and what can only be referred to as our best one yet. What better way to kickstart the year than by reflecting on the one got by and predicting the one ahead? On this episode, we chat about the biggest trends and hypes of 2021 and what to watch out for in 2022. But Bandits, the best part of the show, as always, is our guest for today. I have to pinch myself, but across the screen from me is the one and only Tim Sackett.
There are many, many reasons why Tim is the best person to kick off our first episode of the year. The first one being that he is one third of the podcast that inspired this one. I'm not ashamed to say that the podcast HR Famous not only got me hooked to podcasts, but helped design this very one that you're listening to. Tim is also the president of HRU Technical Resources, a leading IT and engineering staffing firm. He has 20 years of combined executive and talent acquisition experience, working for Fortune 500 companies in healthcare, retail, dining, and technology. Tim is a highly sought-after speaker on leadership, talent acquisition, and HR execution. He's also a prolific writer in the HR and talent space, writing for Fistful of Talent, which is one of my favorite blogs, if it can be called that, and his own blog, The Tim Sackett Project. Tim, welcome to the show. I am so glad to have you here. And tell me, are you doing dry January?
I lasted maybe not even 12 hours. So first of all, thank you for having me. It was a wonderful introduction. My oldest son's birthday is January 1st. And he's over 21 here in the States. So we have to celebrate with him. So it's hard to have a dry January when your son's birthday is the first day of January.
Well, you could start on second.
Yeah. I think moderation January is much better because leading through the holidays, it definitely is over the top, I think.
Absolutely. I think it's one of the biggest seasons for all the 0.0s out there. I wouldn't drink them any other time of the year. I have been tempted this month because, yes, I'm doing dry January. I have been successful so far. almost there. So...
I know. You know, I actually, I'm already starting to do like some in-person back like events and stuff. I have to be in San Francisco in a couple of weeks. I have to be in Minneapolis next week. And that's difficult as well because professionally, when you go to a conference and speak and then people want to go out and have a drink and all that, like it just adds a whole complication to it, right?
Absolutely. I was, there was a point of time when I thought I would go off alcohol altogether, and I was looking up who are the celebrities who do not drink, and I was like, if Blake Lively can do it, I can do it, but I'm sorry, I can't. So I get it. Tim, I'm going to jump straight into our topics for today because I do think it's going to be a long, fun conversation, hopefully. So
yeah,
I'm going to jump straight into our first segment of the show. A lot happened in 2021, including binge drinking, I think, on both of our parts. And we've seen some big headlines over the last 12 months. It began with GameStop short selling. We saw El Salvador adopt cryptocurrency like no other country. And we ended the year with almost everyone searching the internet for metaverse-related content. Not only that, the world's supply chain broke with a new shortage every week, ranging from semiconductor chips, construction materials, foam, pet food, cream cheese, to even individual Heinz ketchup packets. There were a lot of breaking headlines in the world of work too. So Tim, what in your opinion was the biggest hype in 2021 that does not need to make its way into 2022?
That doesn't need to make it. You know, I think the media, especially in the U.S. market, really went over the top on the work from home thing. Again, I think a lot of there's a good part of the population that would love to be able to work from home. And what we know with technology now is that many of us can work from home. But like I saw a recent study from college university graduates of 2021, 98% said they wanted an in-office experience as they start their careers and they start to do that. What I think, so there's this kind of perception that everybody wants to work from home. And that's not the case. I think there's a ton of people that for their own mental health actually want to come to the office and have interactions and have that environment, which is somewhat of a sense of normalcy from pre-pandemic stuff, right? It doesn't matter. I keep wanting to say, well, if you have kids and, you know, you want to get away from them or whatever, but it's really anybody. I've talked to so many people who are single and alone in their apartment for months on end and how devastating that is to their mental health. So for me, it's more about flexibility. It's about treating people like adults. If I have a doctor's appointment on Tuesday and I don't really need to be in the office, why would I come into the office, right? But in a traditional kind of work world, we said, no, you have to come to the office and then go to your doctor's appointment and then come back and fight the traffic and have all that stress. And it's like, can we just treat people like adults? Now, for those people who can work from home, want to work from home, that works great for their life. Great. Let's do that as well. That's another level of flexibility for them. But like, I just wish we would stop all the work from home hype that we have going on, you know.
I agree. And I think I've seen the same challenge that you're talking about, where those who are new to the organization especially want to come in because they know that's the best way to build connections. Or they don't have the privilege of having a home office. They're like in a cooped up space where they sleep right in the same place, they eat in the same place. And they're just like, can we go back to having like a nice big desk and all the facilities and a good internet connection and so on? So.
Oh, yeah. No, you and I are both doing this from our homes. I can tell, you know, just from our video feeds. And I got pushed out, you know, because I have a new puppy at the house and my wife's home. My son has a half day and I was in the office and they're like, look, if you're going to record, you got to go down in the basement, you know? And so now I'm in this like craft room, you know, surrounded by stickers and tape and scissors, you know?
Totally. I understand. Well, I think in my opinion, my biggest hype of 2021 was the 4-day work week. I think we've been discussing this for a decade, if not more.
Yeah.
But it got maximum airtime last year. And I began this year by reading a Fast Company article that said the tech firm Bolt, they're moving to a 4-day work week. Now, don't get me wrong. I love the concept of a 4-day work week. I would love for it to be normalized. But I think it takes the attention away from why is it that we dislike work so much that it needs to be compressed into 4 days? What does it? I think there's a lot more conversation that needs to happen than just we're going to go to a 4-day work week. So,
you know, I live in a cold climate in the state of Michigan, and a lot of companies here will do the 4-day work week from June 1st to August 31st because there's such a small window of warm weather, right? So they're like, hey, people want to get out and people want to take their vacation that time anyways. So let's just make it happen. I do think, like, again, I'm a very kind of metric data driven kind of leader in my company. And we set goals. And I tell people all the time, I don't care if it takes you 20 hours, 40 hours, 60 hours. If you meet your goals, I don't care. Like, I don't like, so if you want to work a 4-day week, great, kill it, meet your goals. and we have unlimited PTO, so they can do whatever they want from that standpoint, as long as, right, they're meeting their goals. So I think that's, but I agree with you. I think when people just like blatantly throw it out there as, oh, everybody should have a 4-day work week, you got to go, wait a minute, like, everybody can't be like, you know, France, like, stop that, you know.
Absolutely. And we've discussed this on the pod on a previous episode in depth also about like certain industries have the privilege of moving to it, certain industries can't. So it's like, I think I would like to see a little less discussion on the whole 4-day work week this year.
Do you, Do you remember, I mean, this is probably, gosh, maybe even 10 years ago, Tim Ferriss had the 4-hour
work week?
Like, come on. That's not, you can't work a week for 4 hours unless you're like just independently wealthy and maybe you're trading crypto or something. I don't know.
I know someone's got to earn the bread. Like, if he's not doing it, maybe someone else in his family is working more than
I know. I need to get on this NFT train and just start putting together, like, you know, HR artwork or something. And maybe I'll be independently wealthy, can work a 4-hour week.
Oh, that would be something. Then we can write an open letter to him. So, now, because we're talking about hypes and trends that don't need to make it to 2022, I'm very curious. I'm going to actually call this our predictions pod.
Yeah.
Predictions for 2022, and we meet in January 2023, and we'll probably see how right or wrong we were. So, Tim, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay. Give me your first top trend in the world of work for 2022.
That we will be talking about retention more than any other single topic. So, I think when we take a look at this great resignation, great reshuffle, all these people changing jobs, and we're still seeing this kind of a little bit in the first quarter of 2022. I think companies are going to be laser focused in on how do we retain the talent that we have, because we can't just go keep on. We can't stay on this treadmill of hiring more, because it's going to cost us more money. It's going to cost us our productivity. It's going to be a real hindrance to our success as organizations. So for me, I think the 2022 is really the year of the great retention. How do we go back and show those employees that work for us how much we care about them, how valuable they are to us, and stop letting them just go and take another job someplace else? How do we actually get back to showing them that we really care? And again, some of that could be some of those things we already talked about, adding in flexibility, adding in, you know, a more time off for mental health, whatever that might be. We just have to be laser focused on retaining the talent we have.
I guess the trend one is the great retention. Now I know this is a very cliche thing when, you know, you ask what should an organization do to retain its people? They're like, be nice to them, build flexible policies, like do more of the stuff that HR has been planning to do for years now. Is there a space that you think we've completely missed looking at so far?
Yeah, I do. I mean, some of this demographically, again, I'll take it from the lens of the U.S., right? Because this is where I do most of my work. We have a major demographic shift similar to what Japan had probably 10 years ago, which is we have a really aging population. Some of the European countries are facing the same kind of thing. And so we have so many people, millions of people a year retiring out of the workforce, and in such a huge number that we're actually throwing leadership positions to people that are very young, that probably have less experience than the generation before them. And so they don't really have the leadership ability, and we've been really lax at really giving them the development and training they need to be great leaders to retain, right? What we know over, you know, decades of research is that people will stay and work for a really great leader. Even if you kind of make all things equal, right? I mean, compensation and benefits and all that stuff kind of have to be equal. If you have a better leader, they're going to stay with that leader. And yet we have so many young leaders who want to be a leader, but sometimes just don't know how. They get overwhelmed by the position, overwhelmed by, you know, having to hold somebody accountable. And at the same time, how do I keep them engaged, right? It's a really tricky situation. So for me, I think we're going to see a ton of money and effort and resources go into leadership development, during this time.
I think that's also really fascinating from the point of view that over in the past 5 years that I've been working, we've seen this whole tout of saying we are a young organization, our average age is 24, and you'll see these senior leaders and CEOs who are like 24 years old, 25 year olds. And I haven't ever worked for those organizations, but I've heard it can get messy because everyone comes with a very individualistic characteristic and says, we know what we're doing. So that's interesting.
Well, no, we've seen some major in the HR world, right? We've seen some major issues with executives at these young companies getting themselves in trouble really doing things. I don't want to word this inappropriately, but doing things that a younger person would do at their age, right? They're going and they're trying to date and they're trying to like flirt with somebody. And you're like, no, you're the CEO. You can't flirt with one of your workers. and they're getting themselves in trouble. But you're like, well, we should have anticipated this, right? When they're 24 years old, that's a point in their life where they're like looking to date and you know, be active in that kind of world, right?
That's an interesting piece. Yeah, I probably should go away and pencil that in my things to think about a little more. But so
we shouldn't be shocked by it, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely not. Well, hopefully we won't see a lot of that happen this year. Well, while we're talking about trends of 2022, let me talk about what's not going to be a trend in 2022. I have a feeling that I'm going to quote Fast Company a fair bit in this particular pod, to the extent that maybe they should consider sponsoring it. But I recently came across this term called trauma-informed workplace in a Fast Company article. Then found out that this term isn't new. I was just very late to the game. It has been around for way before the pandemic. But like everything else, it got more airtime in the pandemic than any other year. Now, I have a feeling that because we're all talking about it, it'll probably get some attention in the beginning of the year and then fade away later. But I'm going to quote directly from the article because they were very affirmative that this was the future of work. So the article says, trauma, any event or experience that leads to emotional, physical, spiritual, and psychological harm, distress, or impairment is what's plaguing the workplace. And organizations have failed to adequately address and offer support to their employees and the organization trauma that ensues in meaningful ways. A trauma-informed workplace seeks to minimize and limit the harm of trauma at an organization level. As the world continues to reel from havoc and devastation of COVID-19, organizations are falling short as they implement initiatives and strategies around employee well-being, prioritizing speed over what their employees actually need. We saw companies publicly applaud themselves for giving employees a week off to deal with burnout, despite evidence and research that suggests a week off was essentially ineffective. In a 2018 American Psychological Association survey, more than two-thirds of the 1,500 respondents reported how the mental benefits of vacation disappeared within a few days of returning to the office. 2020 made a lot of people look at their current workplaces and realize that they deserved something that's been long overdue, better. The future of work is trauma-informed workplace, and it's time to give ourselves permission to prioritize the needs of humanity over the workforce. Now, that was a mouthful. I'm going to take a break from speaking while you comment on it, Tim.
You know, it's interesting. It's a very liberal kind of take on the workforce and trauma. And I'm not saying that this is right. Like, I have my grandfather fought in World War II. He had his best friends killed right in front of him. Never once did he talk about that or have it impact him going to work every single day, right? And raising five daughters in, you know, as a single income earner, you know, that it was a tough thing. And yet he had this major trauma happen in his life that he just kind of compartmentalized. Again, is that the most healthy thing in the world? No, but he was a successful person. Sometimes I think this is the Gen Xer in me coming out. Sometimes I think we're a little soft, especially through this pandemic in terms of this word trauma. Because to me, trauma is something that's like, just really, really, really kind of major. And so I go, oh, your boss was mean to you. And then someone goes, oh my gosh, I have work trauma. And you're like, oh, come on, I want to punch you in the face. Stop it. Like, you don't have real work trauma. But that being said, you know, we talk about work-life balance constantly. And I think what we're really talking here is just the next level of work-life balance, where someone says, well, we should be focused on humanity and not the workforce or not work or blah, blah. And I'm like, well, understand, like, we work to give ourselves the resources to focus on humanity. Many times we get out of balance. Sometimes we focus too much on work and not enough on our life and our family and all the humanity. Sometimes we're focusing too much on humanity and not enough on work. Like, that's a constant give and take, I think, for balance. I think that's where I see this as of what happens. I think was people, again, we go back to this work from home, and people all the time, like I heard this comment the other day where someone said, I no longer go to work. I live at work. And if that's your take and you're working 24/7 because you're working at home, well, yeah, guess what? That you're going to have some trauma from that. Like you have to figure out that balance of saying, how do I work and add that flexibility? And then how do I actually then focus on, you know, my life and balance and everything around it?
I agree. I think there's a lot to unpack in that one paragraph. I think I agree with the fact that our solutions for mental well-being have at times been like, pick from the market, just put in place what's required versus what employees need. Like the whole giving 1 week off to the entire organization, I genuinely don't know how effective it is in the long term. It's great publicity, definitely. I don't know if that does more.
Can I share one story? I think that like ties this Absolutely. Together really well. So I'm very close to Detroit, which is a, you know, kind of a major automotive city in the world. And there's a lot of suppliers, a lot of manufacturing. And there was a black gentleman that the newspaper, the Detroit Free Press had a big story on. For 18 years, he walked an hour to work. Now, again, we have winters, cold weather, and then had to walk home. And literally it was like, I mean, it was like a 10 mile walk that this guy had to take. So maybe it was even more, it was like maybe an hour and a half walk there and back. 3 hours he was spending each day and never missed a day of work in 18 years. And ironically, one day the owner of this company was driving to work and saw this guy, it was a snowstorm, saw him walking, stopped, picked him up, and then found out for the first time this whole story. Now, again, you could go, how did somebody not know this story? But it became this like huge story, and one of the auto companies, you know, bought him a car so you could actually drive. If we think about what we're dealing with today, what that dude dealt with for 18 years, every single day, never missed a day of work, having to walk through rain, sleet, snow, freezing temperatures, and knowing when he got up, he's going to have an hour and a half walk just to go and have to work 10-hour shift and then have to walk all the way home. You and I probably both have stories like this from our lives, right, that we hear about. And I'm thinking, did that dude ever once get up in the morning and go, oh, I have trauma? No, you know what he did? He got up and said, I have bills to pay.
Absolutely.
I have a family to take care of. And he went and did it. So, the HR person in me wants to be empathetic and wants to reach out to those, you know, those people who are struggling. Because I know everybody... life impacts everybody differently and uniquely. I think that's like the takeaway for me is it's not about a broad stroke of everybody in our workforce is facing trauma. It's the realization that there are certain people who need our help right now. And then there's others that don't, but maybe will down in the future, right? So focus specifically, personally, versus going, how do I build a program as an HR leader for all employees? Like all employees don't need you right now. Just certain ones do.
I at one point thought maybe they're just talking about building a psychologically safe workplace, but it doesn't have the same ring as a trauma-informed workplace. Well, with that, Tim, give me your next one. What's the next trend that you see?
Next trend that I see, you know, I'm really into like the technology side of what we do. And when we think about like how hard or how difficult it is to hire right now, over the last probably 5 years, programmatic job advertising has really tried to take off, but it's still a low adoption rate. But with how difficult it is right now and the marketing level that's needed, I think we're going to see mass adoption of programmatic job advertising. And we're seeing this where a lot of the ATSs and HR HCMs are starting to build this technology within to make it even easier for companies. So I think there's just a better way, more effective way for us to start advertising to people and letting them know that we want them to come work for us.
Could you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, traditionally when, you know, I think most organizations will go out and they'll put a job posting, or they'll have their job scraped to Indeed, or maybe they'll sponsor that in Indeed, or they'll put a job posting on LinkedIn or a ZipRecruiter or something like that. And what they're really doing, because at any moment in time, about 30% of the workforce is actively looking for a job. And so what they're doing is saying, hey, how do we advertise for 30% of the total market? Where programmatic is going to go out and say, okay, you're looking for a nurse. Okay, we know nurses go to this site, or we know this person based on their social footprint, you know, is a nurse. And so we're going to start you know, putting ads to this person specifically, right? Because we're pretty sure based on all the data that she's a nurse or he's a nurse. And so programmatic is just more effective at getting that 100% of the marketplace or workforce that is, you know, out there in on the internet with a social footprint to make sure that those ads are going to those people. So it's just a more effective way to spend your money using programmatic. And again, marketing companies have done this forever. Like if we're on Facebook, you know, I'm a big shoe guy. And so I'll be looking for, you know, the newest, you know, Nike, you know, Jordan 1, you know, color, whatever. And I look at it, I'm like, oh, if I spend $250 for a pair of shoes, my wife's going to kill me. And so then I'll go to Facebook and then there's that, there's those shoes. And then I'll go to LinkedIn and there's those shoes. And then I'll go to, you know, some other site and there's those shoes. And it just follows me around. Programmatic for job advertising is exactly the same thing. It's about getting those ads in front of the individuals you want to hire where they're at, not where you think they're going to be.
That does sound like it's much needed this year. But for a moment, when you said you love technology, my heart almost skipped a beat. I was like, oh my God, is he going to talk about metaverse?
I don't, to me, I don't, the metaverse thing, like it's just funny because like everyone say like Nike and all these like companies are getting into the metaverse. I will tell you right now, you need to come and punch me in the face if I buy a virtual pair of tennis shoes for $200. Punch me in the face. Because I do not need a $200 pair of shoes that I will see when I put my, you know, Oculus on. Like, I don't need that. Come on.
I agree. Metaverse was actually a contender for my second, not a trend. See what I'm doing here? You talk about trends. I'm going to tell you what's not going to be a trend in 2022. But Metaverse didn't make it to the list by a slight margin. What is my second, not a trend, is languishing. I think we've been languishing for a while now, but the word Adam Grant introduced us to in 2021 has played its role. I don't think we'll be hearing as much of it in 2022, but I could be wrong. Do you think we're going to see much of the word languishing being thrown around now?
I mean, I hope not, right? I hope we hear prospering more than languishing. You know, it's I think a lot of us have a lot of hope for 2022 and what it's going to bring. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty out there, but man, I really hope that the languishing thing isn't there. By the way, the metaverse piece that we just kind of spoke about, I do like. There's a part of me that when we, because you and I have both been like, how many, like 1,000 virtual meetings now, or you know, Zoom meetings, team meetings, all these different meetings we've been on. I would love to put on. And Facebook has come out with a little bit of this, and they're starting right with kind of the Facebook at work, which I would love to be able to put on. There's a big piece of me, the book Ready Player One kind of got me into this, which is I want that haptic suit on. I want my VR goggles on, and I want to go to a meeting and be able to put my hand on your shoulder and feel it, you know. And to me, that's a way better virtual meeting than just looking at each other on a screen, you know.
Oh, I agree. I think the concept Meta, erstwhile Facebook, has sold us is pretty appealing in what it sells. I do think the reason that Metaverse did not make it on the list is because I do think it's going to stay a topic of conversation, even if it hasn't found its way to implementation. I think that's going to take some time. But Web3, the blockchain, crypto, NFTs, Metaverse, all of it, I think 2022 is the year where HR learns more about it, but it won't be the year where we actually go ahead and do it in the workplace and implement it. I think that's going to come later.
You know, a good way for HR people that are listening to the pod to think about this is I just spoke with a company that's developing a digital wallet for employees. And so if you think about how we use PayPal and Cash Apps and Venmo and all these different kind of digital wallets that we use, if you think of an employee saying, well, what if I was an employee and I'm working from home and I had to go mail something and it cost me $10. like I have to go fill out an expense report and send that in and have someone process it. If I had a digital wallet, I could literally take a picture of that receipt, upload it, and then immediately, right, $10 would show up in my account. Or if I'm a sales leader and I want to have a competition for my staff and somebody meets their goal, instead of waiting for 2 weeks for it to show up on their paycheck, if they had a digital wallet, I could immediately put that money into their wallet and do all those kinds of things. And so I take a look at that kind of the digitalization of workforce that we're doing and saying that those kinds of things, right? It's like the daily pay software, where if I'm a 18-year-old and I'm working at McDonald's and I clock out at 5 o'clock, at 5:01, theoretically, my pay could be in my bank account. That's amazing, right?
Awesome.
Those are the kinds of things that I think that HR has to be focused on when we start thinking about blockchain and, you know, kind of all of those kinds of pieces.
Or making cryptocurrency a part of your pay. I know, did I get this wrong?
Sure.
But I think Airbnb is already starting to introduce it as a part of your total compensation structure. Anyway, with that, Tim, give me your last trend for 2022.
My last trend, I want to say business travel will start to get back to normal. There's a really up demand. People kept thinking, oh, business conferences will never come back, right? They're always going to be virtual. I do believe that business conferences will have a virtual component, where if you and I can't go to the conference because we're ill or because we don't have the resources or whatever, I can go virtually and attend. But what I see is so many people like just so eager to get back out and have some real kind of human connection that I think we're going to see a rebound in the second half of 2022 in business travel in a really, really big way.
I'm optimistic about that. I was actually supposed to be in Virginia at the time of us recording this. I know, but Omicron happened and I had this huge fear that everyone else would be there in the meeting except me. And I was just like, okay, let's just get the whole thing canceled. So, you know, you lobby around and ensure that no one else flies, because I knew it would be a disaster with everyone in the room and just like a couple of people not being there. Like as much as we'd like to believe that we've got the understanding of how a virtual and in-person works together, I've been in those meetings and they're terrible.
Yeah, no doubt.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Okay, I'm going to call out my last not a trend for 2022. Tim, you probably have some kind of crystal ball where you predicted it when you gave me your first trend. So you've kind of stolen my thunder, but my last not a trend was going to be the great resignation, the great reshuffle, the great reset, call it what you want. I'm going to quote Fast Company, hopefully for the last time on this pod now.
But hey, Fast Company, you better start sponsoring this pod. You're getting a lot of love.
I know. Well, I think a lot of publications have their moment on their pods, and this is just Fast Company's moment. But this article, and for our listeners, all the links that we're talking about will be linked in the show notes, so feel free to check it out and read the entire article. But I'm just going to quote the line that says, "So is quitting higher than normal? For sure. But is it off the charts enough to earn the moniker of great? I don't think so." It's gone to say that per Bureau of Labor Statistics, 3% of all non-farm workforce, and this is all US-based statistics, voluntarily left their position as compared to 2.4% in 2019. The total number is still large. It's 33 million people. But in terms of percentage, the jump is 2.4 to 3%. The whole debate is it big enough to call it great? I'm not debating that we had the great resignation in 2021, but if we were to call great resignation a trend in 2022, I don't know whether we'll have as many people resigning. And if it's for 2 years in a row, can we still call it great? Or like, does it stop being great? So
I think we call it life at that point, right? It's just reality. Hey, by the way, isn't a huge miss by us as like HR leaders that we didn't call this out December 2019. Because if you, especially in the, if you're a US HR person and you didn't see this coming, then you're just blind to what was going on, because we had historically low unemployment, like 3.9, 3.6% overall. In some markets, like in IT and engineering, they were like in the 1% unemployment. And yet, and that was the first time we saw the number total unemployment people in the US go under the total jobs. So we should have known this was gonna hit. And the pandemic kind of gave us a reprieve for about a year and a half, 2 years. But we should have already known that this was going to happen.
I think in 2020, we kind of saw it coming, because we were wondering, like, why is no one leaving? We know that the moment the market gets up and running, everyone's going to go. So I think people knew it was coming. They didn't know how to deal with what's coming, at least a certain segment of the HR population. I don't know if you'll see the same amount of resignations. I hope we don't. I'm still undecided about that. But with that, look, I'm no clairvoyant. I don't know how many of this we'll get right. I am very curious, which is why 2022 is going to be the big year for what HR's professionals to watch out to see what's coming. But what I do know is COVID and its variants are here to stay. So like you mentioned, when it's for 2 years running, it becomes life. And I think this entire virus has kind of become life. And we will see a few surprise trends pop in, but I think most of it will be continuation of the last 2 years. But Tim, before I let you go, we've spoken about work trends. What's the one non-work related trend that you're really looking forward to this year?
Wow. That's a great question. You know, for me, I think we take a look at the habits that we have created during the pandemic. And so some of those, you would hope that the trend would be either the good ones continue or the bad ones, right, go away. One of the things that I loved, it's funny because I've done articles on this where I said it was like good COVID, bad COVID, right? Some of the good COVID was people really getting back outside and enjoying nature. And we've seen this like in our national parks and all of this, where so many, I mean, like they've had record numbers of individuals getting out and enjoying nature. And when we think about the climate crisis that we're facing as a planet, and now more people being out in nature and seeing what's really happening and going on, I think that's a positive thing. So I hope that the trend that continues is that we continue to get out into nature and really enjoy it and really understand what the true beauty we have in the world, right? And then how can we protect that?
That would be wonderful. The thing I'm most looking forward to is unfortunately not environment friendly at this point of time. So I'm just sitting and wondering who's the next billionaire launching themselves into space. And I'll tell you why. There's a part of me that's, you know, you look back to when Kennedy said he's going to put a man on the moon, and that was one big wave for space exploration. And then over the years, it stopped becoming everyday dining table conversation. Whereas last year, it was like everyone was talking about it. And I'm very curious to see what it does for space exploration and colonization if we get there in 2022.
So do we think... So are you thinking 2022, we're going to get a billionaire not just launching themselves into space, but actually landing on the moon? That would be pretty big, right? Like, who's going to do that first? Is that Elon? Is that Richard Branson? Who's decided to, like, I'm going to stop and land on the moon? Maybe put my summer home there? I don't know, you know?
Well, I'm sure some of them would like a summer home there. I don't know whether they'll get around to actually doing it. So. With that, Tim, it was an absolute pleasure to have you on this pod. It's literally, I cannot think of a better way to have kickstarted the year for HR Bandit. So, closing comments at this point.
No, thank you for having me. And I love, talking shop. So, we'll have to come back in 2023 and figure out if any of our predictions were correct, huh?
We're definitely doing that. And Tim, because you know the closing line, off or better than I do, for good reason, I'll let you do the honors.
All right. For Nkita and HR Bandit, I'm Tim Sackett, and we are out.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India, Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.